Before I get started, I would like to thank the co-authors of this study, Dr. Berkeley Patton, who is in the audience, you can wave your hand, and Carol Bo Thompson, who's also with us this afternoon, and also Aaron Moore, Sandy Wainwright, Starlin Hawes, and I think I've got everybody now. Okay, and I have no financial relationships to disclose. And I'd also like to acknowledge some of the pastors and the leaders who have been really influential in the Taking It to the Pews initiative and really helping us develop some of the tools that we've used in the toolkit as well as the games. The following pastor, Reverend Eric Williams, who is the executive director for Calvary Community Outreach Network, Reverend Golden Davis, Reverend David Gilmore, and Reverend Richard Prim, pastors who've been really influential at the very beginning of the Taking It to the Pews initiative. And you know, I have to say that it wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for their leadership and their influence in really getting the word out to the rest of the community. Also, I'd like to thank the Black Church Week of Prayer for the Healing of AIDS in Kansas City and the AIDS service organizations that have really helped us along the way, Truman Medical Center, the Good Samaritan Project, and Casey Free Health Clinic. So, and as our moderators already kind of highlighted, many of us are probably aware that African Americans are disproportionately affected by HIV/AIDS as well as other STIs. So when we look at the number, we can see that African Americans comprise approximately 13% of the U.S. population. But when we look at the percentage of people living with HIV, 46% of those are African Americans. And 45% of all new HIV infections are happening among African Americans. And the picture is equally as grim when we look at sexually transmitted infections. For example, African Americans account for 48% of chlamydia cases, 70% of gonorrhea cases, and 46% of syphilis cases. And one thing I do want to mention, when we look at these numbers, we sometimes think, okay, well, what's going on in this community? Why are these rates so high? And the reason for these disproportionate rates isn't due to race alone. There's a lot of underlying variables that affect the disproportionate impact African Americans have for STIs, HIV, as well as a whole host of other diseases. And some of these include limited access to care, poverty, and specifically with STIs and HIV, the stigma that's been present in the African American community for a long time around addressing some of these issues. And also, when we look at HIV and the early wave of the disease, much of the intervention efforts were aimed at gay white men. And for a long time, many African Americans felt and believed that they weren't at risk for HIV. And really, we haven't really done an effective job of getting the message out to some of the more vulnerable populations. And so when we look at all these, the disparities of HIV and STIs among African Americans, it's a huge public health concern, and it's really imperative that we create prevention efforts aimed at this particular population. So much so that the CDC has issued a heightened response to the HIV crisis among African Americans. And there are really four areas that the CDC works on with their partners to intensify efforts to reduce the HIV disparity among African Americans. The first one of these being expanding the reach of prevention services. Again, educating African Americans about the risk of HIV and STIs. Increasing opportunities for diagnosing and treating HIV. Not only are African Americans disproportionately infected with some of these diseases, when African Americans are diagnosed, usually it's at advanced stages of the disease, when treatment efforts aren't as efficacious as if it were diagnosed earlier on. So testing, being diagnosed early, is really imperative. And then also the third step is developing new effective prevention interventions. And finally, mobilizing broader community action. And the reason the ACT are capitalized here is that ACTION stands for increasing awareness is the A, and breaking the silence of HIV and AIDS in the African American community. C, communication, delivering communication messages in places where African Americans live, where they work, where they play, and where they worship, and tailoring those messages for an African American audience. And finally, T, promoting testing that will lead to early diagnosis and effective treatment of HIV. So some people might ask, well, why is it so important to develop interventions for African American churches? Well, historically, the African-American church has been an institution with a long-standing history of social and community involvement and a vehicle of social change. Many of us need only think back, even though I wasn't alive then, but you can think back to the civil rights movement and how active and influential the African-American church was in that effort, and they continue to be influential today. And then also, recent studies have shown that more than half of African-Americans report attending some sort of religious service on a weekly basis. Also, African-American churches represent folks from a diverse range of ages, socioeconomic status, sexual orientations, and membership residents. Many of these churches have similar doctrinal beliefs and activities. And then also, just in addition to the typical people who would attend church, most African-American churches are also involved in varied outreach activities. So they not only have the ability to reach those regular congregation members, but also those in the larger community. And some of these activities include feeding the homeless, providing clothing, shelter, helping with utility services, and childcare in some cases. So there's really an increased reach and a great opportunity to reach many African Americans by delivering and creating interventions for HIV and STI within the African American church. So this is kind of where we come in. And so researchers from UMKC, Calvary Community Outreach Network, along with some of the AIDS service organizations in the Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas areas, started the Taking It to the Pews project. And so this was really after realizing there was a golden opportunity that was ripe in the African American church. We began to develop ways that we could actually help and equip churches to educate the community about HIV and AIDS. And what we found is a lot of churches were on board. They really wanted to do it, but the question was, how do we go about it? And so again, this was a community-based participatory research approach. So the church leaders, the researchers, all of us worked in conjunction with each other, and we all brought our specific strengths to the project. And we were involved in every step of the project. So in this, the goal of the Taking It to the Pews project was to really increase awareness and HIV screening activities among African Americans. And so it started out with 12 churches, and now there are 23 churches, and this is in Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas, as well as Montgomery, Alabama. And it began as a 12-month project, the 3-month intervention phase, and then a 9-month implementation phase. And so, again, a lot of churches wanted to be involved in addressing HIV and AIDS, but many of them didn't know how or where they start. And so one of the goals of the Taking It to the Pews initiative was to create a toolkit so churches could have everything they basically need in a box to start educating their congregations about HIV and STIs. And these materials were religiously tailored, packaged in a church-based toolkit, and the church liaison served as interventionist. And what's important to kind of keep in mind as we were developing some of these tools, it wasn't just the researchers working in a vacuum, but we also got input from the pastors and the church leaders, because oftentimes what we as researchers think is acceptable to talk about in church, the pastors don't agree with. One case in point being condoms. There were, and some churches varied on this. Some pastors were uncomfortable talking about condoms or handing out condoms to congregation members, while others were very proactive in that idea and had already instituted that. So we really had to tailor the materials to the comfort level of the church leaders. Okay. So just some of the toolkit contents included a sermon guide, and this was really to help pastors not really tell them what they should preach, but help them kind of incorporate messages of HIV into their typical sermon. So one example that we included in the sermon guide was the story of the Good Samaritan, which I'm sure many of us have probably heard at some point, and really incorporating messages of how the church can be proactive in helping those who are infected or affected with HIV. Other toolkit materials included pastoral observation guides, responsive reading, and that was really interactive, call and response type of reading where the entire congregation got to be involved And it, in fact, from focus groups, from the feedback that we got from focus groups, most people really enjoyed the responsive reading because it really engaged the entire congregation around a common issue. We also included HIV-related posters, bulletins, fact sheets, discussion guides, resource materials, and what I'm going to go into more detail about today is educational games. Okay. So the theoretical foundation of educational entertainment kind of derives from the social cognitive theory in that people learn by imitating their role models. There's also kind of pendants of the theory of reasoned action, which states that social influences affect behavior, beliefs, and social norms, and diffusion theory, which states that behavior spreads through a community group over time. And so entertainment education approaches to health promotion and disease prevention have been a popular method for many interventions that target adolescents as well as adults. And some of the educational entertainment, as sometimes referred to as edutainment, I kind of like that, the word, addresses a number of public health issues. It's been used to address teen pregnancy, immunizations, and more recently, HIV and AIDS. And in fact, all across the world, educational entertainment resources have been used. For example, in Zimbabwe and Tanzania use a form of television education entertainment in the form of soap operas, where they actually incorporate messages of HIV prevention and the importance of testing into popular soap operas. And also other countries, such as Ethiopia and St. Lucia, have used radio series to educate residents about HIV and AIDS. And these have been very, very popular and very well received, and has helped to reduce the stigma in some of these areas. Lesser studied of these forms of educational entertainment or educational games. And so through the course of our work with the TIPS churches, and after conducting several focus groups with churches to really get an idea of what was working, what wasn't working, what are things that we could do to help improve the toolkit, an overwhelming response was that people wanted more fun, interactive things to do with their congregation. And like I said before, the responsive reading was very popular because, again, it was something that engaged the whole congregation, and people wanted something similar to that, but something more fun. So we kind of got our wheels turning, and we were thinking, okay, so what can we do to make this fun? So we started thinking about games that we could incorporate into the toolkit that could be used in a variety of settings. And so here are just some of the games that we created, and I'll go into a little bit of detail about each. There was an HIV 101 Jeopardy quiz, which, if time permits, we'll get through today and do a quick demonstration. An HIV testing Jeopardy quiz, a Wheel of Awareness game, and a Hershey's Kisses game. So the HIV Jeopardy quiz, again, participants were divided into three groups, and the categories included general transmission, statistics, and prevention. And some of the pros of this game was that it was really simple, diverse implementation. When we initially created this game, we created it in an electronic PowerPoint format. But one thing that we did discover along the way is, you know, as researchers, sometimes we take for granted that all churches will have a laptop and a projector. And so that wasn't the case, so we had to be very flexible and adapt this game so that we could create a board form so that churches who didn't have the technological resources could effectively implement the game, and we were able to do that. So again, simple, diverse implementation, and what we found is that these games really brought out the competitive nature in people, particularly during one of the Reaching All God's Children's conferences that we held. We gave out gas cards at the peak of the gas price. We gave out gas cards to the winning teams, and it really, you know, you have all of these good church people coming out, and then the claws come out when there's gas cards on the line. So it was really fun and exciting to see. The second game I want to talk to you about is the Wheel of Awareness. And the really great thing about this game is that, again, this was developed by one of the TIPS churches. So, again, they were involved in every aspect of the project, from just design, implementation, and delivery. So, again, this is modeled after the popular game show. And some of the categories include STIs, HIV prevention, HIV testing, and stigma. And then the Hershey's Kisses game. This is another game that we had to adapt. There were two versions of it. And the goal of this game was to increase awareness of how quickly HIV and STDs can spread and how they can be stopped, and also to really kind of break the ice and reduce the defensiveness around discussing HIV and STIs. So this game is really fast and simple to implement, and we've used it effectively at some of our conferences. And we actually used it at my own church with our youth group, and everybody finds it fun, and everybody loves chocolate that they get to eat at the end. So basically the way the game works is that, you know, all of the participants start out with a bag of Hershey's chocolate candies, and so during the course of the meeting, they're asked to introduce themselves to each other and exchange a piece of candy. Well, two of the bags contain different colors of Hershey's Kisses, so there might be a dark chocolate or a Hershey's Kiss with almonds, and those bags represent HIV or an STI. And so during the course of exchanging those candies, what we find is at the end, there are lots of people who have those different colored Hershey's Kisses in their bags. And so it really helps to get the message across that, you know, we're all at risk for HIV, and it's not a matter of who you are, it's a matter of what you do. And so by exchanging candy, or in this case, or exchanging body fluids, that you are potentially at risk for HIV. So it does help to reduce some of that stigma related to HIV and STIs. So again, our findings from our focus groups. Again, most people love the games. They found it fun and interactive. In fact, many of our TIPS churches have implemented the games during the course of their Sunday morning services, during youth groups, as well as during Bible studies. The games have been easy to use, easy to implement, and help to reduce the stigma of HIV and STIs. As some of you might imagine, in some churches, it's not really easy to go in and talk about, you know, sexually transmitted infections and HIV, because, you know, when you start that conversation, you have to talk about sex, which some churches aren't ready for. You have to talk about homosexuality. You have to talk about a lot of other issues that some people find uncomfortable. By introducing these concepts in the form of a game, it really does break the ice, and it really opens the door for open and honest, candid communication. And some of the feedback that we've received just from the members of the TIPS churches is that it's about time that the church address this issue, and if you can't get this information at church, where else are you going to get it from? Okay. So in conclusion, future interventions should incorporate games as an interactive educational entertainment tool to educate African Americans about HIV and STIs, as well as a wide variety of health topics. Okay. Now, are you guys ready to have some fun? You ready? Okay. So let's see how competitive everybody's going to be. I know we've kind of sat through session after session, and now that it's towards the end, I feel like, you know, let's just kick back and have a little fun and see. Let's test our knowledge of HIV. So how about we have the right side of the room against the left side of the room? And again, this is HIV 101 Jeopardy, so based on the popular game show. Okay, so let's start with the right side of the room. Do we have somebody who's going to be bold and daring and select a category and point him out? Okay. True or false, HIV is a disease that only affects people in high-risk groups, such as homosexuals, prostitutes, and drug users?
False.
Okay. The answer, that's all right. Okay, so the answer for transmission
is
false. So HIV is an equal opportunity disease that does not discriminate based on age, race, gender, or sexual orientation. It's not about who you are, it's about what you do. Okay, so we've got 100 points on the right. Anybody on the left? Carol?
Yeah, prevention for 300.
Oh, you're gonna up the ante. Okay. An important component of HIV prevention is being aware of your HIV status. Name two methods of HIV testing available in the Kansas City metropolitan area.
Well, you picked it.
Well, what are just two general? Well, it could Because the methods in Kansas City are pretty similar. Okay, we won't share. Okay, so we've got rapid testing, and we've got two types of blood tests. We've got the ELISA, or the Western blot, and then we also have the OraSure. Okay. You have 300, so yeah, you guys are in the lead. Okay, are you guys ready to up the ante on the right? We'll just do one of each and then finish with our final Jeopardy. Okay. HIV is most commonly transmitted in these three ways. We'll give that to you, because blood is a bodily fluid. So again, sexual contact, blood, and from mother to child. Okay, so we've got 300 here and 300 there, okay. Let's, you know what? I don't, because I didn't want the claws to come out. Okay, left side, one more. Because you guys are tied now, let's see if you guys can take it.
Come on, Stanford, go, Stanford, go.
Aren't you on the study?
Yeah.
Okay. No, Carol, you can't play. Anybody else?
General
for 200. Okay. So this disease is commonly referred to as AIDS, and what I'd like to know is, what does the AIDS stand for?
Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome.
Ding, ding, ding. So the left side of the room wins. Exactly. Acquired, meaning people are infected or with the virus and not born with it. Immune, it's our immune system's, our immune system fights off infections to help us stay healthy. Deficiency, it's to be without or not having enough. And syndrome, a group of symptoms, disease, illness, disorders, or conditions that define a disease. And this is just one of the ways that we help to educate African American churches about HIV and AIDS. Thank you.
Get another chance. I was ready. I know. Well, thank you. Everyone, I think we've heard an underlying theme from all our presentations of the importance of our cultural competency. We have to be sensitive to cultural diversity, whether we're in churches or in schools or different foreign lands. We have to pay attention to what's going on, and often we go in, healthcare providers, we know the answers. That ain't necessarily so. I've been to a couple of sessions, and I'm so excited. I don't want to go home. I've got so much in my head thinking about what I want to do, but there's just so much information that we go out with all good intentions, and the researchers are learning that what we think is the right way to do isn't necessarily what the population needs and what they want. So we want to be sensitive to that when we go out and do what we need to do. I don't know how many of you were here on Sunday and heard Dr. Cornell West's revival service, because I understand that's what's all over the blog, is that we had a public health revival on Sunday. And we have been charged to go out and ensure that social justice is in place. We can all do it, no matter what our professions are. We can each do something different, something to ensure that people are going to be in a healthy environment. We have to take back control of this world and the health of the nation. We focus on particular areas of expertise and our professional disciplines, but we work pretty much in silos. And we're learning that those silo borders are coming down. We have global health care, global health awareness. The borders of the earth are melting, literally, with global warming. But we do see barriers breaking down, and we have to be able to collaborate across disciplines that we need to go places we've never gone before, okay, to make America healthy and to help improve the health of the world. So I do want to take this opportunity to thank everyone, the panel, as well as you, for staying till the bitter end. But we had games at the end, so it was well worth it, okay? But everyone, please get home safely, and thank you very much. Any questions? I got excited again. Okay, thank you.